Welcome to another episode of The Brand Called You, a video and podcast show that brings you leadership lessons, knowledge, experience, and wisdom from hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Today, I am privileged to have a multi-talented and highly accomplished friend, Sohail Seth, with me. Sohail, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Ashutosh. Thank you.
Sohail is the CEO of Counselage, a branding and marketing consultancy. He advises chairpersons and CEOs across the globe. He's a brand advisor to MNCs, which include brands like Vodafone, Dassault, Diageo, and Coca-Cola. He has been or continues to be a principal advisor to Ratan Tata in the ongoing issue with Cyrus Mystery. He is an author of three national bestsellers, and I'm sure a lot of us have seen him on stage and on the screen. So, what would you say are three key milestones in your life or your career?
Milestone number one was to become an entrepreneur and to start our own advertising agency. Mm-hmm. Milestone number two was to then shut it or get out of advertising and discover how feeble and how supplicant advertising had become to the client per se. Mm-hmm. And to start Counselage. And the third was when I got married. Wonderful. To Lakshmi, and we have our daughter Gayatri. So okay. Very clear milestones that one has had. Two related to work, one related to personal life.
And I love your personal milestone the best. I think that is so important in all our lives.
It's the most rewarding.
Correct. As I've often said, children are the only people who make you feel wanted.
So, absolutely. And I think equally, as you very eloquently put it, children being born are testimony to the fact that God is still not dissatisfied with man.
Correct.
And I think we owe it to ourselves, to our nation, to our globe, to bring them up with a value prism that reflects well on the kind of civilizational history that we as a country or we as a nation have had.
Very well said. So, Sohail, let's talk about Counselage. Tell me about the kind of work you do in this venture.
So, basically what happened was in 2006, I got tired of advertising, mm-hmm. as I said, for two or three reasons. Number one, advertising was beginning to be seen as a commodity. Mm-hmm. Number two, in the good old days, which you remember so well, mm-hmm. advertising people were on par with clients.
Correct.
In the sense, we were friends, we were colleagues, we were peers. Somehow something happened and that equation changed. Mm-hmm. The equation changed to a master, almost slave relationship.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
The third was that people who were actually at the client end were becoming like analysts. They wanted immediate results.
Correct.
Brands were therefore sacrificing strategy at the altar of tactics. Hmm. When that happened, I knew that wasn't for me, because I'm a great believer, Ashutosh, that when you build brands, you build them for the long term. Hmm. When you sell brands, you sell them for the short term. Hmm. That's when I started Counselage. And Counselage actually started out of a retirement bug. I was sitting at the main Taj in Bombay. Mm-hmm. In those days, you could smoke, which, by the way, I've given up. Mm-hmm. And Mr. Tata and Mr. Krishnakumar were walking out. And Mr. Krishnakumar says, you sent us this letter, this email that you're retiring. Have you gone mad? Mm-hmm. So, you know, why would you do that? I said, mm-hmm. I'm just exhausted. Mm-hmm. He says, no, what would you like to do? Mm-hmm. I said, I would like to charge the earth mm-hmm. and advise clients on branding and marketing, but only the top echelons.
Okay.
Because I didn't want to get involved with brand managers and marketing directors all over again. Mr. Krishnakumar, given his foresight or his indulgence, said, why don't you start with the Taj?
Okay.
And that's how Counselage began. When I was on the flight back from Bombay to Delhi, I met Oshim Ghosh, who said, listen, why don't you work with us on Hutch? Mm-hmm. And then I flew to Hong Kong and, you know, met the whole Hutch team and then worked with Oshim. And that's how I got involved with Vodafone.
Wow.
So one thing led to the other. It was never, Counselage to this day has no PowerPoint presentation. We don't make a single pitch. We means there's only me. And we have never ever lost a client.
Well, I would say that having spent known you for so long, you're probably a walking PowerPoint presentation yourself.
No, but you know, I just believe that when you're making these PowerPoint presentations, I call it death by PowerPoint. Plus, I also figured people like you, when you were occupying those exalted positions of power, mm-hmm. people at that level don't have the time to come to the end of the presentation, almost at the end of 45 minutes, to understand what the real beef is.
Very true.
So what I did was, I said, there'll be no PowerPoint presentation. There'll be engagement, serious engagement. There'll be minutes, actionable minutes, and you get the work done.
Fantastic.
And that's how we started.
Fantastic. So, you know, ever since I've known you, which I think is a little over 3 decades, you are the quintessential marketing branding man. My question to you is, and I'm going to take you back to advertising, what goes into building a successful brand, other than, of course, the fact that the product has to be good?
So, number one, you need to have almost a maverick-like insightful mind into consumer behavior. Ultimately, our only God is the consumer. Every brand worships only the consumer.
Correct.
They cannot, or it cannot worship anything else. Number two, how do I create disruption, which therefore leads to desire? Often we get the equation wrong. We create desire without disruption.
Correct.
But if I don't disrupt Ashutosh's habit of using a particular toothpaste or a particular edible oil, how will I ever get into Ashutosh's mindset?
Correct.
How will I get into his kitchen or his washroom? So that is very important. The third, to my mind, is scholarship. We have to understand that, and I'm talking about India for a moment. India is not one country. It's almost 6 continents, if you were to consider it that
way. Correct.
Nuances are so, so sharply defined. For me, or for you to say that, oh, what works in Bengal will also work in Bangalore, is incorrect.
Correct.
Then what we started seeing was a very interesting dilemma, an interesting proposition. India gradually moved from joint to individual, from family to individualism. In that, people were willing to stock more than one brand of toothpaste in a home, more than one brand of edible oil, depending on, you know, who was diabetic, who was on a diet, all that kind of stuff. What we did, or what I always do, is I always prepare for day after tomorrow. Because preparing for tomorrow is easy. You've got to figure, what are the people going to say three years or 10 years later? So I served on the Coca-Cola board almost for 18, 20 years. One of the things we did was, we said there will be a time when the average Indian will want his charge in a bottle.
Correct.
Because of time, pressures, blah, blah, blah. He will want a jeera pani. He will want shkanjvi. If we don't do it, someone else will.
Correct.
So why don't we start doing it? So I'm saying a lot of the products, I'll even give you a recent example of Tata Trust. When I started working with Mr. Tata on Tata Trust, the slug line we had was Tata Trust transforming lives. I told Mr. Tata, who, as all of us know, is a man you can't define. So he told me, he says, therefore, I said, I would say privilege to serve. Privilege to serve has a rare humility in it, as also a willingness to continue 128 today, 128-year tradition.
Wow.
So that's how you look at it. And my advantage, or I think my advantage, is that I was a literature student and not an MBA. So you also look at it from the prism of humanity and human behavior, rather than look at it from a P&L.
Very interesting.
A P&L will always perish.
Correct.
Human behavior will only evolve or devolve, depending on what you're looking at.
Amazing. And did they accept privilege to serve?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Even with the Harvest Gold, which you may or may not remember, the bread, the line I gave was bakwas advertising, first class bread.
Very nice.
Well, everyone said, Kia, what will we do? And the advertising was all about limericks.
Correct.
So I think my brother wrote the line, or whoever wrote the line, but it was bakwas advertising, first class bread, and everyone remembered it.
Very nice.
Because everyone remembers deprecatory humor.
Very interesting. So let's move on. You know, the world is for advertising, the world of branding is changing, partly because of the digital revolution and partly because of e-commerce platforms. How will brands survive, or what do they need to do to survive in this new environment?
I think that's an excellent question. So, two or three things will have to happen. Number one, brands must recognize their borders of intrusion it's very easy for a brand to continuously intrude. Consumers mustn't get tired or irritated with brand intrusion.
Correct.
Digital is such a fluid medium, it allows for intrusion.
Correct.
And the brand manager says, see, number of clicks I got, number of hits I've got. Bad. Number two, digital is also a function of our consumption habit. You and I have started consuming more screen time than ever before. The pandemic, by the way, increased the world's screen time usage by 67%.
Yep.
Now, that's a lot of screen time.
Absolutely.
And when people say, I've consumed 67% more screen time, I worry about how much time they spend with their family, how much me time they've spent, and how much time they spend with scholarly pursuits like reading, watching documentaries, whatever. Third, to my mind, brands will have to be very worried about reputational damage. One tweet can destroy their reputation.
Correct.
Just like one tweet can build it.
Yep.
And you're now across media. Anonymity on certain social platforms allows for people to abuse you. So rather than be defensive, you've also got to be, I won't say aggressive, you've got to bat on the front foot. If someone criticizes, let's say someone says, oh, I think this product which I got this morning was bad. The company can't say, no, 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 you're wrong.
Okay.
The company must say, fine, you must be right. We have to correct it. We have zero tolerance. So the manner in which companies respond will also change.
Very interesting. Okay. And what will brands do? Or rather, what will e-commerce platforms do to brands?
So there will be a commoditization of brands by and large. Having said that, the nature of branding is such that brands will always have a certain value premium over non-brands.
Okay.
It's just like if you go to a supermarket, there's private label and then there are branded labels.
Correct.
If you want a particular kind of tea or you want a particular kind of coffee, you will ask for that coffee. But here's the interesting thing, Ashutosh, and I'm glad you mentioned this. When we were growing up in Calcutta, we never bought branded tea.
Correct.
We went to the tea shop. The tea shop knew exactly the kind of blend we wanted. And the blend was created.
Correct.
In a very strange way, we are going back to that time. I find more and more people at a certain, obviously, income level, going in for artisanal coffees.
Yes.
Artisanal teas, herbal products. So, in many ways, you're revisiting. I mean, who would have imagined that Amul would introduce haldi milk?
Correct.
But haldi milk was the reason because you wanted to boost immunity during the pandemic.
Absolutely right.
So consumers create products at times and brands are forced to incorporate those benefits in their branded offering.
Very interesting. And therefore, a follow-up question to you. And you know, you have worked across different age groups over the years. My question to you is, what is, as a marketer, what is your observation of the millennials and the Gen Zs and their relationship with brands?
Two myths which must be explored. I'm glad that you asked me this question. Number one, people say, oh, millennials don't bother about brands and Gen Zs don't bother. They bother about brands like you can't imagine.
I agree.
If they didn't bother about brands, look at a country like India, where almost 30% of your consumptive market is in the millennials and Gen Z target group.
Correct.
If they didn't bother about brands, most of your brands would have wilted away. Look at what's happening in America. What has happened is not that they don't care for brands, but they don't consume brands the way you and I do. And the most important is they don't have a lasting relationship. Their relationship is what with what the brand delivers. You and I would continue to use Colgate even if it disappointed us on 3 days out of seven in a week. These people have zero tolerance for disappointment.
Correct.
Because they have no affiliations. They have no links to the past. And there are no family or peer pressures that they work under.
Very interesting. Very interesting.
So that's basically the change.
Very interesting. And I guess the brand managers have to change themselves to be able to address these individuals.
I think the brand managers today need to recognize that not only millennials and Gen Zs, I mean, take for instance, the age group between 65 and 80. They're your largest consumers of voice over internet.
Correct.
They're your largest consumers of Skype. They are your largest consumers of healthcare, in a manner of speaking.
Correct.
But who talks to them? Very few.
Nobody. Yeah.
We say, yeah, if he's 65, he must be too old. He won't understand technology.
Yes.
They understand technology better than you and me. Absolutely. My mother watches all her movies, all her Pakistani TV serials, Indian TV serials, Mexican TV serials, all on her iPad.
Correct.
She doesn't watch them on television.
Yeah.
So when they asked her, I said, Mama, why are you watching it here and not in a on the television? She says, if I feel cold inside the room, I can go out and sit in the garden under the sun and watch my series.
Very interesting.
So it's all changing.
I agree with you. So let's move on and talk about some of the other things that you do. Tell me about your books.
So the first book was basically a compendium in your face, which is a compendium of all my Indian Express articles, which, you know, was neither here nor there. Yeah. The second was Get to the Top. The title was given by Chiki Sarkar. A lot of people say, oh, was it a networking book? But no. It was just simple lessons I'd learned. One or two were, the first was, if you want to be interesting, be interested. You know, I can't go to Ashutosh's house and have a meaningful conversation with him if all my life, all I've done is only discussed either money or property.
Correct.
The second is basic common etiquette. If Ashutosh and Veera invite me for dinner, I'm not going to say, oh, who else is coming?
Okay.
I'm actually going for you. So it was how life's lessons have been learned.
Correct.
Then never make clients out of friends, but make friends out of clients. So under each of these, there are certain chapters. And it's a book that can be finished in perhaps 2 hours. The third was Mantras of Success by India's Top CEOs.
Okay.
The good part of that was because of a relationship that I have with both Mukesh and with Mr. Tata, we got Mukesh Ambani and Ratan Tata in those days to write in the same book.
Wow.
And that was a good thing. And all three actually have done remarkably well.
Wonderful. And, you know, I've seen you on screen a few times. I've seen you in theater in Calcutta. What are your thoughts or what are your plans in continuing with screen and theater?
Now, you know, you've touched a raw nerve. My biggest regret is that I haven't done a play for the last almost 4 years.
Okay.
The last play we did in Singapore, your erstwhile stomping ground, a play called Art. But for the last 4 or 5 years, we haven't done a play. We need to do that. That is my first love and my only love. Because theater allows you to understand human behavior, to respect teamwork, and to almost be gratifyingly subservient to audience beliefs and audience tastes. Series I'm continuing to do, I'll be doing something in February. I'll be shooting for something in February. It's an OTT, a Netflix Hotstar kind of thing. But theater is my first love and my only love.
And you've done, I think, 160 plus plays, isn't it?
167. But the tragedy is, if you remember in the good old days, you had an ITC, you had a Godfrey Phillips, you had all these companies you'd go out of the way to sponsor.
Correct.
Today, no one wants to sponsor plays. No one wants to sponsor theater. Because it's passé. It's not immediate gratification. We are living in an ATM world when we should actually be rejoicing the world that we had of tellers.
Absolutely.
And when I say that, I say it as a pun. We want any time modification. We don't want the storytellers that we grew up with.
Correct.
Our grandmothers never spoke in slogans.
Yes.
The Prime Minister of India does. But our grandparents spoke anecdotally. When they sent out a signal or a message, it was wrapped, it was enveloped in an anecdote.
Correct.
We need to get back to those days of storytelling.
Very interesting.
Of actually creating. And you know, the tragedy, Ashutosh, is our education system. You'd be shocked that Shobha Day has replaced Shakespeare at Bombay University.
Amazing. Amazing.
I mean, it's not a commentary on either Shobha
or
Shakespeare.
No, I understand.
It's a commentary on us.
Yeah.
There's no Premchand, there's no Dinkar. In Calcutta, there's no Tagore. Other than when he's politically relevant, when Amit Shah or Narendra Modi or Mamata Banerjee go to Vishwa Bharati, that's the only time Tagore props up.
Correct. Well said.
So, those are the things we have to face.
Very well said. I'm going to move to the last section of our conversation and some questions for you personally. For someone who's been there, done that, recognized nationally, globally, knows the who's and who, what does success mean to Sohail?
Nothing.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not being cliched. It's nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Success, wealth, and weight are overrated attributes.
Okay.
You know, there was a very famous comment that came up, and I've always said, when people say, what is it that drives you? A good night's sleep. Well, there was a kahani in Hindi mein, ki ghode bech ke sona. So, you know, success is very relevant.
Correct.
I mean, I will not be as successful as you've been in your career.
Mm-hmm.
You won't be as successful as Barack Obama's been. What is, you know, and we need to go back to the Vivekanandas and the Sri Aurobindos. When Sri Aurobindo actually was asked about success, he says, I don't know. I haven't experienced it because I haven't looked for it.
Correct. Well said.
Jiddu Krishnamurti always said, he says, I don't know what success is because it's never come to me and shown its vicissitudes. It's never shown me its vistas. So I really don't know what success is.
Okay.
Can it be measured in money? Perhaps. Can it be measured in happiness? Never. I know of street urchins who are dancing in the rain on Marine Drive without a care in the world. They are the most successful.
I agree.
They take the underpinnings of humanity and converted it in the face of all adversity.
Correct.
Well, so to me, that is success.
Very well said. But therefore, a follow-up question to you is that what inspires you? Where do you keep drawing your inspiration to keep doing so many different things?
I guess to ward off boredom. And, you know, I'm in Goa because my mother's here, my daughter, my wife, all of us are here just for the winter because of Delhi's pollution. And everyone asks me, oh, are you chilling? I said, I don't know how to chill. I'm doing this with you. I have another Zoom call in about some time. Then I have a strategy meeting, you know, address. I'm busy because I like being busy.
Correct.
It's not that I have anything to prove or anything to achieve. Almost 70% of my time right now, if I may say this on your podcast, is pro bono in any case.
Right.
Because I genuinely believe that we were privileged to have the opportunities of scholarship of education and we need to give back in greater measure.
I agree. That's something I agree with you completely.
Yeah. So,
I have time for two more questions for you. My next question is that if you, Sohail, were a role model to millions of children who closely followed you and your life choices, and I know you've got millions of people who follow you on Twitter, what is the one thing you would change in yourself?
I would become kinder.
Okay.
I can't suffer fools, and it shows. And sadly, it comes across as obnoxiousness or arrogance. I would change that at a heartbeat.
Okay.
But you know the tragedies? I've been trying to change that, and it still come across as obnoxious and arrogant. Okay. But now, what more can I do?
Yeah, I agree.
And I think this plain speak has further aggravated that perception. But that is one thing I would change. I would become much kinder with people who have a silly contrarian view. I don't mind a contrarian view. In fact, Narayan Murthy of Infosys said it brilliantly. He says, I would love people to disagree. What I would worry about is when they're disagreeable.
Correct. Well said. In fact, that's one of the things I've always admired about you is your plain speak, you know, and
yeah, but it gets you into a lot of trouble.
It does. So I agree. So my last question to you, and this is a question on failure. I have a new book coming out on failure. And I've always believed that Indian parents or South Asian parents don't teach children it's okay to fail. And that manifests itself in our behavior patterns. My car must be now first. I'm sitting in the last row in economy, but I must get out first, etc., etc. Yet we keep failing. My question to you, Sohail, is what have been some of your learnings from your mistakes or your failures?
I've always believed that for me, the biggest lesson, and whenever it happens, is failure. And I've always used failure as a measure of personal introspection as to why did I do this. Okay. And when I say failure, I mean failure in relationships, failure professionally, failure personally, failure in managing things that I should have been able to manage better. And I genuinely believe that if we treat failure as lessons, to paraphrase Alice in Wonderland, they won't lessen from lesson to lesson.
Correct.
But we are castigating of failure. We are unforgiving, which is why I always say, if Steve Jobs and Bill Gates were born in India, they would have never been able to create the enterprises they created.
Correct.
India is extremely unforgiving. And I'll tell you why. It's not the children. It's the parents who are competing. If you stand outside a school, it's the women and the men, the parents of children who are competing.
Correct.
The poor child, the hapless child doesn't even know what the hell is going on.
Absolutely right.
And we are competing for societal approval.
Correct.
Which is, by the way, the worst thing.
Absolutely right.
People will always ask you, Ashutosh, tujhi aapka bachcha kaun se school mein jata hai? They will never ask you, usko subject kaun sa achha lagta
hai? Absolutely.
What does he like as a subject? True. They will always ask you, which school does he go to?
Absolutely.
That's what we become.
Well said.
We choose and venerate brands even in the wrong places at times.
Well said. Suhail, thank you so much. It's been such a pleasure speaking to you.
Thank you so much.
Lots and lots of success in everything that you do.
To you too. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to The Brand Called You videocast and podcast. A platform that brings you knowledge, experience and wisdom of hundreds of successful individuals from around the world. Do visit our website www.tbcy.in to watch and listen to the stories of many more individuals. You can also follow us on YouTube, Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. Just search for The Brand Called You.